It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome in to a Wednesday edition of Sports Daily, Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday here. We'll have to forgive the lack of the luau music. Max is still on vacation, probably in Hawaii. Tommy's still not wearing a Hawaiian. But that's okay. Even though Tommy's about to have nobody to tell him that it's not okay for him to wear a Hawaiian shirt to work, he's still not wearing a Hawaiian shirt. But, you know, look, it's okay. It's all right. It's a movement. We've got one more week to convince Tommy to participate, and we'll just have to see if he does.
I'm going to have to see, since I'm sitting in the producer chair this weekend for Max, I got to see if I can find that Hawaiian music. I don't even know. Let me look.
There's no telling where Max keeps all his hidden treasures and secrets. We'll have some fun today. We should be getting a visit from Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director, in just a little bit later in this hour. We also have Shreya Slada.
I don't know. I'm going to stop pressing buttons here.
We also have Shreya Slada coming in. Our KU insider will be in to join us. KU on a bye week. We'll kind of take stock of things and get the latest there. We'll also begin for the Chiefs with a big game against the Philadelphia Eagles. It's going to be a tough one. We talked about it briefly yesterday. We'll start to look ahead to it here today and some of the other storylines. The Royals fall last night, 2-0, shutout again. It's unraveling quickly. They got a couple of games here to get this turned back around, but it's going to be difficult. Tyreek Hill, who we mentioned yesterday in a little potential hot water legally, will go through some new accusations against him. There we go.
I found it. It took me a minute, but I found it. Yeah. I got it.
We got it. And then we'll take you through the rest of the headlines. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, WBC Delano's debut brew of Hatfield's Mama, which is a German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character, smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all three WBC brew pubs. Welcome in. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Caster. Tommy, how are you on this hump day?
Yeah, I'm good. I texted you last night that I feel like I need to give the Royals one of my famous jinxes where I declare the season over because I've done that a couple of times this season, and then they ultimately respond and get right back into it. I probably need to do that again because we're getting right on the brink of things.
They need a Tommy Jinx. For those that don't know, a Tommy Jinx is a declarative statement that is sure to turn things around immediately. It's not just for the Royals that it works. It works in all kinds of scenarios. It has worked in Chiefs situations over the years. So perhaps a Tommy Jinx coming today. I think they need it. I think we're to that time, that nut cutting time, as I like to call it. They better get it together because they're being passed now. A great deal, not just by the team that they're chasing, but by the other two teams, one of which they're playing currently. And it's going to be more and more difficult the longer they refuse to hit the ball, I think, more than anything. So we'll get into all of that today. It's a good Wednesday here. We're in the middle. We're in the thick of the crazy season of football. We've still got baseball, as we're going to talk to the, you know, Shockers probably in a few minutes. We're going to have some basketball talk in there. Injuries in the NFL already rearing their ugly heads. Not just either for the Chiefs. There are some significant injuries we're looking at this week, Tommy, across the league. Here we go. It's week two.
Yeah, it doesn't take that long at all. I mean, obviously, it's a extremely physical sport, so you're going to have players going down, and we've got several of those. George Kittle goes on IR. That was announced yesterday, so the Niners will be without him for a minimum of 4 weeks, and it may be longer. So, yeah, that injury bug has definitely bitten a few teams and a few players here early on.
The Chiefs, the 49ers, who they don't even know who their quarterback's going to be, the Raiders without Brock Bowers, like, they're significant injuries right now impacting things, none of which I don't think are affecting Philadelphia, which would be handy right about now if you're a Chiefs fan.
The big Philly news, though, not injury related, but Jalen Carter. I don't know if you saw this. You know, he was ejected from the game before a snap even happened for spitting on Dak Prescott in that opening game on Thursday. The NFL, they ruled that that was essentially a one-game suspension, and they will not suspend him any further, which I do think that sets a pretty dangerous precedent. If somebody gets ejected middle of the game, if the NFL then rules that as basically that's their one-game suspension, I don't love that. I know it would be beneficial to the Chiefs to not have Carter on the field this weekend, but that's not going to happen. He's going to play.
Doesn't the league know that they're supposed to be helping the Chiefs? Did they forget that?
They did not get that memo this season. The script writers did not get that into the script.
Maybe T-Swizz can give them a call and see if she can figure something out there on that. I'm not sure where the miscommunication was on that. That situation was funny to me. I don't care particularly that he spit on Dak. I just like, whatever. It's one of the more disrespectful things, I think. Like that, slap it. Like if you had to power rank the disrespectful, like instant rage fuel things another guy could do to you, that would be up there. That would be up there. Getting slapping somebody like in the face would be up there. So Dak did his job there, but was it something that like Jalen Carter needs to be demonized for? Probably not. I think he missed the whole game. I'll be honest with you, Tommy. If that news didn't come down yesterday, I would have never thought him missing this game was even on the table. I just assumed he'd be back. I had no idea there was the possibility that that could linger into another game. You've got, and here's why I think to the flip side, like Jordan Addison for a DUI has been suspended 3 games, right? You're going to suspend Jalen Carter 2 games for spitting on somebody?
I think here's the issue. So I understand that comparison. Then that's a little apples to oranges. The issue that I have with it is that, if you're a player, you can have a unsportsmanlike conduct, you know, type deal, throw a punch, whatever it is, to another player. And if it's middle of the game, you know, okay, like, look, I just have to be done for the rest of this game. Like, there aren't going to be any kind of future consequences that I'm going to have to worry about. I literally am just going to be removed from this particular game. So what happens if there's, you know, what happens if it's a blowout or if there, you know, the game doesn't really matter? You could have some kind of melee free-for-all, and, you know, players are not going to get apparently suspended longer than the game that they were just ejected from.
Do players ever get suspended for more than one game for punching and being tossed in a game?
I mean, I think so. I think that's
I'd have to go back and look. I don't recall a getting tossed for throwing a punch and then missing the next game.
What would stop somebody in the third quarter of a 3-touchdown game from throwing a punch knowing, look, the game's already over. I'm going to go to the locker room and there will be no ramifications for me moving forward.
Fines.
Okay.
Self-respect. I think the league has to have nuance. There is a different than Myles Garrett swinging his helmet at somebody and Jalen Carter spitting on Dak Prescott look, I don't like it. I think it's stupid that he did it, but I just never thought of it as something that would have him miss another game. It didn't even register to me that was on the table, but he's going to play, and that just makes it even more difficult for the Chiefs on Sunday afternoon. But we'll get into that throughout the show today. We'll start to look ahead to that game. What are the Chiefs going to be able to do in their current situation to settle in with that team specifically and what they like to do? We'll get into it. It's all coming for you. It's Sports Daily. It's a Wednesday. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday, everybody. We're coming right back.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Shocker Nation painting the Kansas State Fair black and yellow on Saturday for Shocker Saturday at the Kansas State Fair in Hutch. We're airing a special show live and on-site at the fairgrounds with Wichita State AD Kevin Saul, head coaches Terry Nooner, Brian Green, Christy Breadbinner. I think Coach Lamb is also going to be there. Tune in live to KFH on 97.5 and 1240, or check it out in person live from the House of Capper at the Kansas State Fairgrounds on Saturday, 11 o'clock, the show starts. Come say hi. Joining us now, Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul. Kevin, I'll be there with you. You ready for this thing on Saturday out at the fair? Have you been to the fair yet this year?
I have not been to the fair yet this year. Good morning, guys. But we had a great Shocker day at the fair last year, and look forward to another one this year. I know you got an all-star lineup that gets a whole lot better after my segment. You got Lamb, you got Coach Nooner, Coach Breadbinner, Coach Green. Should be a great show.
I'm so flattered, an all-star lineup. Kevin, I'm sitting right here. I'm blushing. I appreciate that. We'll have some fair food, and we'll have a good time. We'll have a good time. Hopefully people will come out and say hi. We're excited to see, you know, kind of what's cooking for you guys and what has been the opening to the fall season. How is everything going right now?
Well, we're doing great. And Tommy, if you can make it out there, the first funnel cakes are on me.
I love that. I'll do my best.
No, we're doing well, guys. We hosted the JK Gold cross country meet last Saturday and performed pretty well. It was a very soggy and wet course, so it wasn't necessarily for time, but they did a great job competing, competed well, placed well. We've got two or three runners that we think will be, you know, just about as good as any other team's top two or three. And so obviously the depth we'll work on over the course of the season, and conference championships don't happen until early November. But that was a good start to our cross-country season. Our women's golf team took fourth up in Lawrence. We talked about that last on your show a couple weeks ago. They took second in Springfield, Missouri this past weekend. Doing really, really well. It's an older group, experienced group. We expect some great things out of women's golf. And then, as you guys know, volleyball is probably performing per the chalk, if you will. If you were to predict early in the season, I think, you know, maybe the loss to Kennesaw State you didn't expect, and the win against receiving votes Arkansas you may not have counted on early on, but started off with a tough schedule, 3-2. And these guys are at, they've got Radford, Tennessee Tech, and Samford this weekend in Cookeville, Tennessee. So look forward to seeing them compete this weekend.
Yeah, we obviously they're in there, you know, the BYU and the Arc, BYU loss, especially. You take them to four sets. I think they're coming along, a young team. I'm with you. I'm excited to see what they do on the road. Seems like an opportunity, not knowing much about Radford, Samford, or Tennessee Tech, but seems like an opportunity for them to get a few wins here. A couple other headline things that have been coming out, Kevin, that we want to give you a chance to give us a little more on. Men's basketball, a couple stories in the last couple weeks since we've talked to you, the Drake charity scrimmage. So what, how did this all come together, and what's happening with this game against Drake?
Sure, absolutely. I think we start with the NCAA rule changes, where you guys know we used to do these closed-door scrimmages for a long time. They give you an opportunity to compete against another Division I opponent in your region, but it was always closed-door. You couldn't market it. You couldn't sell tickets. You couldn't provide any stories or media relations components around it. Well, those rules have changed, and now you're granted basically two scrimmages, if you will, that are outside the season ticket package. And we have an opportunity to host one of those at home against Drake on October 11th at 1 o'clock, and should be a great matchup. And I would describe it almost like a spring football game, where you're going to get some skills, drills, special teams, certain matchups and scenarios that'll be practiced between each team. The head coaches will work on that format together, but you're going to get at least 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes of what we would call traditional game action as well. I think it's a great opportunity for Shocker Nation to come in and take a look at this year's squad. And the beauty of it is, guys, we're charging $20 a ticket. Again, it's outside the season ticket package. And we're going to cover our game expenses, and then the rest of the proceeds are going to go to the Wichita Children's Home, which you guys know Debbie and Mike Kennedy are heavily involved in. And then also UJump, which Cheese Johnson runs that. You guys are familiar with that organization, supported by Tom and Myra Devlin. So it's going to be a great event. It's going to be a lot of fun. We encourage people to come down October 11th at 1 o'clock.
I think it's a really good idea. I'll just tell you, in my opinion, I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea to see the boosters generating season tickets to go out into the community as well. What are we at? Three of those now? Three sets of 50, 150 seats per Shocker game?
Yeah, we've actually got two sets of 50. Yeah, we've got two sets of 50 and one set of 60. Actually, okay. We had a group, the original cup or the Prills increased theirs by 10. So I just think a phenomenal conversation that started with Shane Prill, and Shane and Cayenne's courage to step forward and do that has certainly motivated others. We've got two or three other conversations going on concurrently at this point. But for your listeners, it's just been an unbelievable investment in the community. We've had three couples come forward and buy 50 of our cheapest season ticket we've offered in 15 years, guys. It's a $400 season ticket for 17 home games. I think it comes out to about $21-22 a game. And they bought 50 of those. And the original conversation with Shane was, he wants to support the Shockers financially, which we are incredibly appreciative of, been very generous. But he also wanted to make sure that we had folks in seats, and he wanted to invest in the community. So there were three objectives, and throughout the course of conversations, we connected with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. There's 700 big and little combinations in Wichita, and so we're going to offer that opportunity to them. And then as the Hemp Hills and the Weatherbys stepped forward and did the same thing, obviously there are certain limits or ceilings to how many tickets can get utilized through one organization. So we're starting to bring in other organizations. Yesterday we met with United Way, that's affiliated with over 80 nonprofit organizations. We met with Stand Together, which does great work in the community. And I think we're gonna include the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, and then also veterans in the area as well. So we've got some inventory, guys. I think this is a really creative way to invest in the community, get people in Charles Koch Arena, and provide the financial resources that we need to put championship level teams on the floor. So I'm just really excited about the investment in the community.
Yeah, I am too. And I'm excited about 160 more people being at these games that might not have been there before. Yesterday I was out there and people are asking me, what do we think? What do we think about the team? And it's hard. It's a hard question to answer right now. You know that, because you get asked the question more than we do, because we haven't seen a lot of these players, right? Like we don't know yet. So how do you build the buzz with everybody kind of coming in with a clean slate? And I think this is a good way to do it. You've got an opportunity with an exhibition game. You've got an opportunity maybe that you wouldn't have had because some very generous boosters have stepped to the plate. I think it's all creating a pretty good vibe right now for Shocker men's basketball.
Well, that's good. And we have another opportunity, guys, that I'll plug on September 18th. We have an open practice as well. And so folks can come down to Charles Koch Arena on September 18th for an open practice that afternoon, and catch a glimpse of the team. I'll tell you, I get asked that question all the time, as you guys would guess. And, it's a really, really, it's a fun group to be around. They work incredibly hard, and that's not just words on a wall, guys. Like these guys, we've seen guys enter the facility at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning to get shots up in the gym. These guys are really dedicated, almost at a level where you say, okay, guys, we got to get to the starting line healthy and fresh. They're working incredibly hard. One of the hardest working teams I've seen in the last decade. So that piece is really good. They enjoy being around each other. We're skilled in areas that we weren't necessarily skilled in last year. We've got a couple of really good bigs. We've got four guys that shot better than 40% from three at their previous school last year. They defend really well. The feedback from the TBT players and Zach was very positive that they were defensively polished. Zach told us we didn't miss one pick and roll coverage in that scrimmage where we beat the TBT team by four. They weren't scared. They were physical. So I think there's a lot of things to be very optimistic and excited about.
Love hearing it. Let's go a little broader. Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director, joining us here for a few minutes. We appreciate it. Every couple weeks catching up on Shocker Athletics. How's everything coming with the new, you know, layout of college sports for Wichita State? We know there are salary caps being put in place. Everything is being reshuffled a little bit. Every team and school in the country is trying to readjust. How is Wichita State settling into that new frontier that, I mean, it starts now, I guess. We'll probably really start to see it next year, maybe sooner.
Yeah, you know, it's a project and an initiative that, guys, we've known has been coming for over a year. You know, that house settlement has been a discussion for a little over a year now. And so obviously you start planning when you see the elements and the components that are included in the house settlement, such as roster maximums, scholarship limits, the ability to revenue share. And so you want to set up all the infrastructure that you can to be successful and to be competitive and get a competitive edge against your peers. And I think we've done that in some cases. As you guys know, there's more money in the market this year because a lot of schools dumped money prior to the house settlement. And so what we're seeing and reading is that those dollars are probably going to be in the range of 40% less in next year's recruiting cycle. And so I do think it'll come back a little bit more towards normality next year. But I think we're in a really competitive position, guys. And I can't overstate the fact that we have a competitive advantage because we don't have football. Our football peers in the American and the Power Four peers are putting somewhere in the range of 75 to 80% of available resources through the house settlement. That's a $20.5 million cap. They're putting 75 to 80% towards football. You see that. ADs are talking about that. Coaches are talking about that throughout the country, and those percentages are out there. Well, we don't have football, and so we have the ability to put our resources at a disproportional, a heavy disproportion towards men's and women's basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, those sports that we're going to be able to invest in that our peers aren't necessarily going to be able to invest in. And I think you'll see that pay dividends over the next couple of seasons as these recruiting classes shake out.
So if that's the number, Kevin, and I don't know how many people are raising $22 million or getting to $22 million, but it leaves, what does that leave, about $4.5 million then at 20% of that. Is that an accurate number? Do you think teams, your peers, are getting to 22? Or what do you think the number then after football is for them that you guys can try to beat?
Well, loose, Matt, the cap is $20.5 million this year.
$20.5 million.
Okay, so if you look at 75 to 80%, that means most of our peers are putting $15 to $16 million into football. Okay, which leaves you, let's just say they're putting 16 into football, that leaves you about $4 million for the rest of your sports. What you're seeing is in that 12 to 15% range for men's basketball, you're seeing a relatively small percentage in women's basketball, and then you'll see a percentage for quote-unquote other sports. And I can share with you, based on information that has come out from our peers in the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference, peers in the Big 12, we are investing at a level very similar to Power Four peers in sports like baseball, softball, women's basketball. We know we're in the top three in men's basketball in our league, and that's great. That puts us in a position to win league championships. But you guys know the standard is much higher than that. We got to get to the second weekend in the NCAA tournament. And if you recall, last year's NCAA tournament, Sweet 16, was all Power Four and Big East. And I don't think it's any shock that you've got to align resources to those expectations. And again, because we don't have football, we can certainly outperform our peers that are putting 12 to 15% in men's basketball.
That's There it is. There's the cabbage, everybody. So we'll see. You're saying the things Shocker fans have been hoping for a long time, that this could create an advantage for men's basketball without football. And we're glad you're open and thinking that way. And I hope it does create the advantage, because, man, if the TBT showed us anything, it's that we're ready to rock and roll with this thing. So, Kevin, we are running up against it. We will all see you on Saturday or hear from you. Again, if you can't make it out to the fairgrounds, the House of Capper, we'll start that show. I'll be there with Kevin and Mike Kennedy and the coaches. That'll be at 11 o'clock. You can also hear it live right here on KFH, 97.5, 1240 AM. We'll have some Pronto Pups. I'm a big Gyro fan out there at the fair, Kevin. We'll stuff our faces and have some fun.
All right, first funnel cake's on me, and I'll make a proposal that we transition Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday to a Hawaiian shirt at the state fair. So I will commit to wearing my Hawaiian shirt at the state fair if you guys will do the same.
I'll set my reminder right now. I've got a closet full. That's no issue for me. I'll get that set. As long as I remember, I'll have a reminder ready to go. Kevin, we'll talk to you Saturday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much for having us on the show, and go Shockers.
There goes Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director. We've got Tommy back in now. Tommy, that's the key to it all, is that salary cap and how Wichita State's able to take advantage of not having football. We've been thinking about that, Tommy, for 10 years, right? Like, as long as I've been doing this, it's been sitting there like, man, I remember it first coming up with the joining the American. It's like, man, the resources that can be allocated there. You see what happens with Gonzaga, for instance, or some of these outlier type schools. Now, a lot of them are in the Big East now, but it's like, God, this could be the ticket. And it is a chicken and egg situation. I get it. But I think the community is ready to explode into it. I think we're seeing that with some of these donations that are coming in on season tickets. Vibes are good right now. Vibes are good. Now they just got to go win those basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a revenue share mindset, you know, the fundraising aspect, all of that, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You can look at it partly as a hurdle to overcome or a challenge to overcome. That's on one side. But the other side is there's a tremendous opportunity to set yourself apart from your peers in your conference and other athletic departments around the country. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword. It's not always going to be incredibly easy, but because of the things that you and Kevin just discussed, there is a prime opportunity for Wichita State to really be able to rise to the top, you know, and be the cream of the crop in the American and potentially nationwide.
Can't wait. I cannot wait for it. I am, the things that Kevin just said about the team are the same things I'm hearing from people that have seen them. Exact same things that they've got a little bite to them. And that's going to be good to see. So we'll see it all very soon. We will blink and it will be time to already get into that. That scrimmage we were talking about, October 11th. We're like almost exactly a month away from that. Man, good stuff there. All right, we'll come back. Let's start to look ahead to some of the NFL week here. We'll get a recap of the Royals as well. We've got Sharias Lada joining us in the next hour. It's Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday, everybody. Celebrate.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Sports Talk on KFH, presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built to and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Castor here. It is a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We're glad to be here with you. Thanks to Kevin Saul for stopping by. A lot of good and interesting stuff going on there with Shocker Athletics. And if you want some of the insight onto the salary cap and some of the things happening behind the scenes there, you can go back and listen to that anytime on the Odyssey app. We come back in. Tommy, let's get our Royals talk in now, and we'll shift the football a little bit in the next hour. 2-0 last night to the Guardians. Another really poor offensive effort for Kansas City. They are spiraling a bit here, which was going to happen if they struggled at all in this series because of the way the wild card standings sit. They're now 4 games back of Seattle. They are 2.5 games back of Texas. They are 1.5 back of Cleveland. We are at 145 games, which means there are, 37 to go?
No, way less than that. 17 to go.
17 to go. Yeah. Sorry. 17 to go. And so, 30s, where did 37 come from? 17 to go. We're running out of time here to be 4 games back. It's going to be tough to make up 4 games. Now, the good thing is you do get Seattle. You can sweep them and cover a lot of that ground, but it's got to be a sweep. And the issue now that's raising is there are also 2 other teams ahead of you that you need bad things to happen to. You've got an opportunity to catch Cleveland still, but the team that's beat you the last 2 days, you can catch right back up with them and jump them if you can win the next 2. But you got to have help now with Texas that you can't control. And then you're going to have to basically sweep Seattle. Most likely.
There is a path, but that path is getting significantly more difficult by the day. And I would imagine the odds of them making the playoffs officially are declining by the day as well. They have to have the next 2 games. You drop the first 2 against Cleveland. They have leapfrogged you in the wild card race. You have to get these 2 head-to-head matchups back to get back to having them behind you, looking up at you in the wild card race. Then, as you mentioned, you do play Seattle head-to-head. You have to win all 3 of those games. You could maybe make it happen with 2 of 3, but there are so few games remaining. You have to take advantage of beating the team that you are chasing in the wild card race in 3 straight games. The good news with Texas is that you do hold the tiebreaker against them. So that is a benefit. So there's a path, but there's a lot that has to fall into place. And it's not even, other teams deciding the Royals' fate. There are 2 clear matchups, one that they're in the middle of right now and one coming up against Seattle. They're must-win situations tonight and tomorrow night against Cleveland, and then the 3-game set against Seattle.
It's going to be tough, and it's going to be tough if they don't play better. We learned yesterday Michael Wacha's going to be out a while. He had a concussion. Something happened off the field.
Yeah, do we know? I don't think they've shared.
I haven't seen.
I read a minor off-field incident or something like that, and Matt Quatrero said that he's going to be down for at least a week, which is completely terrible and inopportune timing.
I was at the fair all day yesterday, so until you sent me that, I hadn't even heard that that happened. So, look, it's going to be tough. It's going to be very difficult. We're 12-5 seems like the absolute bare minimum, which would get you to 85 wins, which may not be enough. And that'll mean Seattle, Seattle would need to go 8 wins down the stretch. They'd need to have a losing record. It is daunting, but
it is. And here's the issue. So Wacha was scheduled to pitch tonight, and he's been scratched from that start. The Royals are going to go bullpen game. It looks like Jonathan Bolin is going to get the start tonight for the Royals. And the last time the Royals threw a bullpen game was I think it was the day before the trade deadline. It was right before they went out and got Stephen Kolick and Ryan Burgert. And Bailey Falter, they went and got those 3 guys. They haven't had a bullpen game since then, very end of July. And now they're going to have another bullpen game tonight on the road against a team that you're chasing. And then Stephen Kolick will go tomorrow night for the Royals. So they are hanging on by a thread here, especially when you look at their starting pitching.
Yep. It'll be no bueno. And the problem is the offense right now, even more than at least in this Cleveland series. It's been the offense. Pitching wasn't any good yesterday either, but you got to score more than 0 runs, which other than a little late surge yesterday is all they've been able to muster in this series. They had an opportunity in the 9th inning, couldn't get it done. They're making guys like Joey Cantillo look like Cy Young out there, and it's reverted back to this. And I was thinking about this yesterday. I talked to Brandon Zinner about it a little bit in the office. If you looked right now at the Royals lineup, and you imagine Jack Caglione being a part of it next year, you're looking at a situation where 5 guys at least are going to be there. And you feel good about them, right? Whether you feel good about Jack Caglione, I suppose, is a matter of time. But assuming that he develops into a, you know, a above average big league player, you've got Kyle Isbell roaming center. It doesn't leave much to change, right? Next year, like, what can even be done? Are we done with Jonathan India? And that experience, 2-for-3 yesterday. So if he's in there, that's 6. Like, you're honestly, you're getting into a situation where it's pretty much you've got like a left fielder and that's it. And it sure doesn't feel like just a left fielder is going to fix what has been a chronic problem for this team in consistency all season long. It's a strange thing to think about. I'm not sure what they can do.
Yeah, I disagree with you because I feel like a lot of the inconsistency with the Royals comes from they've had a hodgepodge of players moving all around the field. There hasn't been a whole lot of consistency. And, you know, outside of a couple of positions, you know that Vinny Pasquantino is going to play first base. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to play shortstop. And Salvi is going to play either catcher or first base. And Kyle Isbell in center. Like, that's pretty much it. And
Mikel Garcia at third and Jack
Caglione. Yeah, but they've even moved, you know, Garcia around the field a little bit too. Like, he's played some shortstop. He's, you know, like, there've been some movement, you know, with that. So, you know, Cags is going to play right field and maybe some first base and maybe DH. I think that, you know, that's been a major issue consistency wise. But if you look back to early in the season, there have been a ton of names that have filtered through, especially the outfield with this Royals team, where they could not get it figured out. Guys like MJ Melendez and Drew Waters and John Rave and Tyler Tolbert and, you know, you name it. Like, there have been so many different players that have been out in that outfield. And I feel like things have solidified themselves enough to a point to where, like, I looked at the lineup last night, and outside of, I know Yastrzemski didn't get the start, and I wish he would have, but outside of that, I'm like, yeah, this looks like a pretty solid lineup. Like, they had Randall Grichuk, you know, playing in the outfield. To me, it looks like they have found, generally speaking, their lineup, and it will be great to see, in my opinion, potentially a full season of all of that next season. They haven't had that. Like, it wasn't until really after the trade deadline that I feel like they've been solidified, the addition of Adam Frazier coming in and all of that, where they've been solidified in who they want to have, and they're not just kind of like piecemealing together a lineup as best as they can.
Yeah, I mean, Yastrzemski has 3 hits since August 30th, playing almost every day. He didn't play last night. I don't know, man. I want to say that's what confuses me about it, because on paper I do like it, but then we revert back to an offense that is just anemic all the time, like way too often. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think that's the point for me. I agree. Like, there is like 80% of this lineup moves forward to next year and you feel good about them individually. And then for whatever reason, collectively, they can't score any runs consistently. It is insane. I haven't been able to figure it out all year. No matter what the scenario is, Caglione's development will help, but we're looking at an offense that is, I mean, I think they're the worst offense in the American League. Are they the worst offense in baseball? Not quite. Pittsburgh's worse. But it's close. Like, with the names they have in their lineup, it just doesn't make any sense.
You're going back all the way to the very beginning of the season. Like, I would, the offense, if you go trade deadline moving forward, or even the beginning of July moving forward, they're by far not the worst offense in baseball. Like, they have been, I know the last couple of games notwithstanding, but generally speaking, since the 4th of July, since the trade deadline moving forward, they have significantly improved, you know, and even from a power perspective, more home runs. I mean, like, they were by far the worst team in baseball at hitting home runs, you know, from the beginning of the season. But if you shave that off, when I feel like they've stabilized that lineup, and especially, you know, having Cags there and trading for Yastrzemski and trading for Frazier, bringing all of that back in, we saw Vinny Pasquantino heat up. Salvador Perez has heated up. Like, they've been a much better offense. So I think context on that is important. When you're going back to the beginning of the season, remember, they had Hunter Renfroe and MJ Melendez in their opening day starting lineup, right?
You know how many times in the last 11 games they've scored 3 or more runs?
I get it. Like, they have they've fallen off. They have fallen off in the last week at the most critical time of the season.
Last 2 weeks.
The most critical. I get it.
competent baseball offenses don't do that.
But you can't take
2 weeks.
You can't take the last 2 weeks and then you can't cherry pick the last 2 weeks and cherry pick the beginning of the regular season when it was nearly a completely different lineup and say, well, just overall the body of work is the lineup is really bad. Because in the middle, it got a whole lot better. A whole lot better.
For a minute it did, but
longer
it's been
than a minute.
Bad
it's been
more
longer
often,
than a minute.
It's been bad more often than it's been good this season. I was optimistic too. And then we like in the biggest games of the year by far, they fall apart for the last 2 weeks again. And it like that shouldn't be happening to a lineup with some of these names in it. Maybe they can turn it around. They're going to have to because the starting pitching is hanging on by a literal thread.
That's what I'm more concerned about moving forward.
Well, you should be concerned. I mean, we've been concerned. I told you 2 weeks ago we should be concerned about that. It was falling apart then, but they're not getting any help. So now it's just – and that's why we end up with a situation we're in now where they're just desperate to do anything. And again, one thing we do know about the offense especially – is it can string it together real quick and in a hurry and put it together for a week or two, but they're going to have to because they don't have it right now in the rotation. They're just either guys are pitching way over their limits or they're hurt or whatever. Like they're going to have to score to get this done. And this was a problem. If you remember at the end of last year too, and into the postseason, they couldn't score any runs either. They've got to go out and find, like, what is the spark plug? Because all the pieces are there in the offense when you look at them individually. What is that missing thing for consistency? Hopefully they can find it over these last 2 weeks. The Royals back in action against Cleveland today. You'll hear the game right here on KFH. See if they can get it done. We'll come back. We got football talk in the next hour. Shreyas Lada joins. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's a Wednesday here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. It is Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We are rocking and rolling through the middle part of the week. It is a busy time of the year. We'll have Shreyas Lada in later in this hour to help us get ready for, KU's bye week. Not really getting ready for anything, but we'll take stock of where the Jayhawks sit following the Missouri game, how they look going into Big 12 play, which they'll begin the next time we see them play against West Virginia next week. We'll also talk Chiefs, get you ready to begin the preparations for the Eagles and a little bit more on this Tyreek Hill situation. It's all what's on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring the Pep Pep Pepperoni Pizza. It's topped with sliced, cubed, and deli-cut pepperoni. Pep Pep Pepperoni, now available in a lunch or full size at Wichita Brewing Company near you. Pizza and beer made here. All right, Tommy, we come back. Yesterday, we spent some time with the idea of trading for Tyreek Hill. Since we had that conversation, Hill has been accused of multiple instances of domestic violence. His estranged wife has done that as a part of divorce filings. These are accusations that Hill denies. His attorney's calling it a shakedown and a smear campaign. She claims 8 instances of domestic violence, some violent, like in nature. Hill's going to get his day in court on this. It's a divorce. It's messy. Like, it would be one thing if this wasn't like the fifth time we've been dealing with this, with these kinds of accusations, with a conviction before in his past. Like, do the Chiefs and look, if you watched The Kingdom, you know their philosophy on this stuff. Andy Reid, it was such a well done episode, and it gives you some insight into how he feels about second chances and all these things. And I do love that. But man, I don't know about ninth chances, and I don't know that Hill did anything here. I'm not saying that he did or did not. The courts can decide that, but there's always something with him. And he is not the same player they put up with some of this for of the past. do the Chiefs really want to go down this road and try to figure this out? Like, is this really where they need to turn their attention, where they need to spend their time, energy, and resources? Tyreek Hill would come to Kansas City. He'd be well received by the fans. We know all that stuff would happen. But what if any of this is true, right? And I don't know that any of this is even being heard criminally. Right now, it's a part of a divorce proceeding, so I assume it's all civil.
I think that's the important distinction to make in all of this. And I'm not trying to downplay this. I'm not trying to whitewash it, erase it, whatever. This is not a criminal investigation. This is not anything that he has been charged with. This is not anything that he is going to court to potentially have some sort of penalty, you know, jail time or probation. Like, it's not criminal in nature. This is a part of a divorce proceeding, and who knows how nasty of a divorce proceeding this actually is. That being said, there is a long history of issues and situations with Tyreek Hill, and so it's probably pretty easy to connect the dots from point A to point B and have like a correlation causation type conversation about, well, you know, he did it in the past and he was convicted or what, like whatever. So clearly, like, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like, I can understand that conversation and the perception. Perception is reality in today's world and all of that. But let's be very, very, very clear, and let's be fair to Tyreek Hill in this. He is not being criminally charged in this. These are allegations that were made in a divorce proceeding with, from what I can tell and from what I've read, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but from what I've read, it's not like these eight instances that were documented in the divorce proceedings, there was any kind of police interaction. Right. There was any kind of charges that were filed. There was any kind of protection order or arrest, or there was none of that from what I can tell. Right.
And he's been a part of shakedowns in the past.
Yes. So I think it's extremely important in this particular situation to make sure that context is out there as well.
It's the context is everything when we're talking about the situation specifically. I agree. And he has been victim. It might be the wrong word, but he's been on the wrong end of this type of thing before, but he's also done some pretty terrible things.
Yeah. He's not put himself in a good position in a lot of cases.
Like, and I'm not trying to say that, like, I'm not making any opinion on Hill here. I'm just, as the situation is out there and you're the Chiefs, it's a conversation you're going to have. It's a conversation you're going to have with fans. It's a conversation you're going to have with the media. He's older. He's not as productive, and he's expensive. And so when you look at the challenges the Chiefs face currently with the Xavier Worthy injury, I think that you have to consider that stuff when you think about going and making a move like that. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be a tough move to make anyway. Is this a check in the column that says, you know what, let's not go down that road? I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. They obviously gave Kareem Hunt a second chance. I don't think they'd have any problem giving Tyreek Hill a second chance, but this situation exists. And there have been other situations since he's left Kansas City, some of which he has been in no trouble for, some of which have been settled, like, whatever. Like, it's just always something, right? It's never just like, we're just going to quietly handle our business here. Kareem Hunt, quiet. He had his terrible moment in time. He is sort of the poster boy for Andy Reid's philosophy. Everything's been all quiet with him, I think. Since his situation that had him released the first time, redemption story, all those things. Michael Vick, if you go all the way back, Michael Vick obviously learned from his experiences and by all accounts has become a much better person through them. Andy Reid, second chance, all makes sense, right? This one hasn't been as quiet since Hill's been gone. So that's just something to consider is all I'm saying. I'm not trying to convict Hill of anything. I'm just saying the situation's out there. We're reading about it every day now. Like, it's there. It's something to consider if you're the Chiefs and you want to go and potentially, again, there's nothing solid on a trade, but it is a trade that could make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. But it's all something to think about when you're talking about Tyreek Hill. But boy, that and then that begs the question that we'll get to in the next segment. How badly do they need to do something? and how badly and how desperate for this year do they need to be, and can they get where they're trying to go through these murky waters of this, what's sure to be this early season? That's the, you know, in Tyreek Hill's case, that's a $30 million question.
Yeah, I think that it's appropriate in a situation like this, and in really in any situation in the NFL, for the team and the front office to do their due diligence on a guy before they trade for him. That is totally standard, totally fine. And part of that due diligence would be something like this. The 8 allegations of domestic violence against his estranged wife as he's going through divorce proceedings with this person. That absolutely falls inside the parameters of doing due diligence on a player before you trade for him, before you bring him back into your organization. The Chiefs have done their due diligence on Tyreek Hill. They've done that multiple times over the course of his career. They drafted him and brought him into their organization when he had had issues prior to him even entering the league. He was kicked off his college football team. Like, there have been, these things have existed for a long time, and that has not precluded the Chiefs from bringing him in. Would they do it again? I think that that is up in the air. And I don't think it's necessarily just because of this particular situation. There are a lot of reasons why.
There are football reasons.
There are football reasons why. There are contractual reasons why. There are financial reasons why. And then there's this. I think it's fair to say that it ends up on the list as they're doing due diligence and as they're weighing the pros and cons. It's not the top of the list, but it certainly is on the list.
Yeah, it is. And just so that's out there. As we talk about that, don't want people saying, well, you're ignoring the fact that, no, we're not. We're not. It's there, just like it's there for the Chiefs to evaluate. And the Chiefs may not be interested in this anyway. So we'll get into all of it when we come back. We'll look at the Eagles game. We'll continue to kind of look at this first 6 games. And we want to know what a lot of people talked about at the fair yesterday, Tommy. It's what happens right now for the Chiefs. And are they going to be okay? And what do we think? And it's like it's a complicated question. I mean, it's a very different scenario than we imagined just a month ago that is facing the Chiefs now. We've only played one game, but it's a different situation than we thought it would be a month ago, like vastly different for a bunch of different reasons. So we'll get into all of it. What do they need to do against the Eagles? How do you attack this game individually in this stretch of time where you're going to be thin? We'll get into that. We've got Shreyas Lotta coming up later this hour. Looking forward to all of it. If you want to win some HTO, you can do that right now. Text keyword T to the short code 20357. That's T to 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Get your hands on the new Caramel Apple Sweet Tea. It is available. This coupon will be good at East Wichita, West Wichita Derby. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back. Chiefs Eagles. We'll begin to preview it next.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here on a Wednesday. Glad to be with you. Get you ready for the back half of the week. That means preparations for the Chiefs to play what we'll look back on as one of the bigger games they'll play all season. In fact, over the next month, they'll play a lot of those games, and they happen to come when the Chiefs are limping a little bit to start the season. You know, it wasn't that long ago, Tommy, where we thought, okay, all of those things that, you know, really presented themselves as problems for the Chiefs last year, having to go sign guys off the street, make in-season trades to try and piece together a bad injury situation. Well, they're already here. It's week. We've played 1 week of football, and the Chiefs are without their 2 top wide receivers. And we look at an offense that it is right, I think, to have some questions about when it's really, you could make a case that they're down 3 of their 4 perceived top receivers, depending on what you think about Jalen Royals, even as a rookie that we haven't seen really play any football. But from what we thought we would have coming in, they're missing 3 of their top 4 wide receivers. Hollywood Brown is still there. Juju is an old man now, but he knows the offense, right? That's what we're clinging on to. A guy who missed all season last year, basically because of injury, and an older player who has been a Band-Aid for this organization for what, 3 years now. That's old Travis Kelce, who I think still has plenty left in the tank. It is going to be a tough stretch of games until they will, depending on when Worthy comes back, even when he comes back with a separated shoulder or whatever it is that he has, it's going to be tough. They're going to have to reinvent the offense before they ever got a chance to reinvent the offense.
What do we know about Andy Reid and the front office? They don't panic on things. They don't make knee-jerk reactions. They don't go and, you know, try to...
I would say they're very realistic, right? They knew they needed to do something last year. They went and they got Kareem Hunt. That wasn't knee-jerk. It wasn't panic. It was realistic. They were realistic when they went and got DeAndre Hopkins last year. They looked at it and they said, that's not going to be enough. They're saying right now that they have enough. Whether they believe that or not, I think is a really interesting question.
Yeah, and I think that, and I've seen people that have immediately resorted to, you know, going back to what they did with Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins and drawing comparisons to this situation. They're two totally different things, because you're talking about short-term temporary fixes, because Rashee Rice will be back after six games. Xavier Worthy, by all accounts, should be back at some point, right? They didn't know if they would have Hollywood Brown at all for the remainder of the season. Right. They knew they were going to be without Rashee Rice for all of the season last year with his torn ACL. They knew that these were like either season-ending injuries or long-term, no guarantee that they'll be back type injuries. Isaiah Pacheco was on the shelf for what, 10 weeks or 11 weeks? Like, they were long-term injuries last season, and they knew they had to go out and get some reinforcements, and that's what they did with Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins. This is a different situation because you're dealing with guys that by all accounts should be back relatively soon, that 4 to 6 week type, you know, time frame, depending on the Rashee Rice suspension. Obviously, that's, you know, five more games, and then we don't know about Xavier Worthy, but they're not going to go and be knee-jerk and go make a major trade or go and sign somebody off the street if they feel like we're going to be just fine in a few weeks from now and we can sort of hodgepodge together our wide receiver room to get us by until then.
And look, I 100% agree. It is not the same thing as last year. It's a very different situation. The line is better. They're healthy at running back, which they were not last year, right now. If we go back and we evaluate what they need to do in this time, it will be to run the ball. The Cowboys ran the ball moderately effectively. Now, granted, Carter did leave the game, and that's something to, you know, to make note of. But the Cowboys, they broke off a big run, which is of note. They had an okay time running the ball. It was one of the more effective things that they did in the game. They had 120 yards rushing in the game. Philadelphia's secondary has been very good. I think when we look at games right now in this short term, I don't think the solution for the Chiefs will be to try and, you know, fit a square peg into a round hole. You're down pass catchers right now, big time. You are healthy at running back. You're facing a team that annihilated Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. You're facing a team that the Cowboys, with a far less talented backfield, were able to just run the ball effectively. The answer to the Eagles, and maybe the answer to the first 6 weeks, will be to run the ball. Not, you know.
I laugh because you're not wrong, but I'm not going to sit here and get my hopes up. They're going to do that.
But Tommy, even if they just, what I'm saying, and I know they're not going to turn around and be a run dominant offense, but if they'll just run it to the clip they were forced to run it in parts of last season. It was happening. It wasn't at the end of the season because they started to get pass catchers back and they started to throw it again. It was kind of that middle part of the season where they were really just trying to, I mean, they were winning all these games. That's the ridiculous part of all of this. But when they were trying to band-aid it to the end of the season, just to that clip, like, can we see collectively 25 carries to the running backs in this game. I don't know. I think it usually takes them more time to get there. But this is a game specifically where that also makes sense. So it's not just like a personnel issue or like last year where it was a we can't pass block issue and Patrick Mahomes is getting creamed every. It's not just that now. It's we're playing a team where that may be the way to play them anyway. How do you slow down a great offense when your defense didn't look great in week one? You play ball control, right? How did Army beat K-State? They controlled the ball. How can you beat that great Philadelphia offense and protect your defense a little bit? Control the ball. Patrick Mahomes is going to run this year. I mean, he showed us that in week one. It's going to happen. So if that's a part of it too, pick up first downs, control the clock, run the ball a little bit. You've got Pacheco. Let's see what Elijah Mitchell has. Let's see what he's got. Like, give him some carries. Whatever it is, there are going to have to be ways outside of what they did last year because they don't need to do that stuff. To your point, they're going to have their pass options back before the halfway point of the season, most likely. So these are temporary issues against an insanely difficult schedule through the first six games.
Counterpoint on that. I mean, I think 25 carries collectively is high. I think more than likely, probably what we'll see is, 15 maybe. And then the remainder of the 10 that are not being handed off to ball carriers, you're going to see more dink and dump offense, and in the pass game. You're going to see dump offs to Breshard Smith, which I think I would love. I would love to see him, be able to break a couple off, from the backfield where he's catching them, in the pass game. You're going to see, some really short passes, maybe slant routes over the middle by Juju Smith-Schuster. You're going to see a lot of what we saw a season ago. They might ramp up the running game a notch, but I think 25, as much as I think that would be ideal.
Yeah, it was 10 against the Chargers, by the way.
I think going from 10 to 25 would be shocking. I would be surprised by that.
I don't think it's going to happen. But I think it should. Now, the only
it might be a modest increase. It might be like a 15.
When you play a team like the Eagles, the challenge is if it doesn't work early, it can get away from you, and then you can't do it. So, perfect game script, if we're looking at it, to me would be when you can absolutely script those first, the first drive or two, throw it around a little bit. That's great. I've got no problem with that. But man, when you get into the second quarter and late in the game, If the game is close, that's where I think running the ball becomes paramount for the Chiefs. They don't need to come out of the gates and just say, all right, we're going to run it three times and to hell with what the results are. No, that's not going to work against the Eagles because probably they're going to score some points. So it's got to be nuanced a little bit. This is a challenging game for the Chiefs. It is a very challenging game for the Chiefs. They're home underdogs. They're never home underdogs. It's a bad matchup. It's especially a bad matchup when you consider the injuries the Chiefs face right now. So we'll see. And then it's a game against the Giants on the road. And then it's the Ravens. And then it's a road trip to Jacksonville, who looked very good in week one. And then it's back home to face Detroit. And then hopefully the Chiefs get their weapons back in some of the other insanely difficult games that they play this year, which are all but like three games. They'll be closer to full strength, and then we can get a real feel for this thing. We talked about it yesterday. Are we going to feel good, Tommy, if we get to week seven when they're back closer to full strength? I mean, I would feel great about 3-3. Are we going to feel good about 2-4?
I mean, it could very easily spiral away, so
2-4.
I don't know. Here's the thing. I think that, everybody rightfully so is focused on the lack of personnel offensively. I mentioned this yesterday on the show. How are they going to execute an offense with the loss of Rice and potentially not having Worthy for a while and whatever that looks like? At the end of the day, what I'm most concerned about, not only this coming week against Jalen Hurts, but over the next few games is, man, how are they defensively going to be able to lock down? Because at the end of the day, Justin Herbert ran all over the Chiefs defense in that week one game. He was outstanding. It's a little bit terrifying to know that you're going up against Jalen Hurts and then 2 weeks from now, Lamar Jackson. You have got to contain the quarterback. You've got to contain him and make him beat you with his arm, both Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson in that regard. And, you know, they're both good passing quarterbacks as well, but you can't let them run all over you. And they let Justin Herbert run all over them in week one. And so we can, I think it's the easy conversation to have to talk about, well, man, offensively, what are they going to do? And they don't have pass catchers and they're down three of their four top guys and blah, 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 blah. There were some glaring issues defensively in that week one game against the Chargers. They've got to get shored up, or I think that's the more likely reason why they end up 2-4 after their first six games, not because of a lack of pass catching, but because defensively they've been leaky.
I agree. I totally agree, but that's been a threat all year. You know, my anticipation and proclamation on this season is that they're going to go back to just outscoring people more often than shutting them down the way they have the last 2 years. Yes, the challenge, Jalen Hurts is not in the same stratosphere as Lamar Jackson as a passer, in my opinion. Jalen Hurts is good when he's efficient, and yes, when he's running. Philadelphia is going to try to run the ball. So is Baltimore, by the way. When you have Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, and those quarterbacks, of course you're going to try to run the ball. And that's where it has to start for the Chiefs. They must make Jalen Hurts beat them through the air. They cannot let Saquon Barkley beat them, and they cannot let Jalen Hurts run on them. Jalen Hurts doesn't, he's not going to just break him off. Now he has, but I don't think that's what he wants to do. I think he wants to be a point guard out there, and he's very good at that. But yeah, you can't let him run, and you also have to stop Saquon Barkley. If they can do those things, then Spags can tee off a little bit, maybe on some of their deficiencies. And Jalen Hurts is, you know, if you can make Jalen Hurts try to throw it on you, I think you're in much better shape. And Spags will dial that up. But you're right. If they can't stop the run, they're not, because Philadelphia will run it as long as they can run it. They're, you know, they'd be happy to just turn around and hand the ball off 30 times. So yeah, that's and here's where the challenge comes in now with the injuries. What if they can't stop them? What if they can't stop Baltimore? This defense right now, whether it gets there with the young players, it's going to have to elevate or not right now. And it's not the same defense. And so if they can't stop them at a high clip, can this version of the offense keep up with that? That's why, to me, this is so daunting through these first 6 weeks, because I don't think the defense is going to be able to shut these teams down. And when that happens, they're far less equipped right now to keep up with them. When they're fully healthy, give me the Chiefs offense, right? When I know Worthy and Rice, and we'll see what Royals is, but with Kelsey, and like, heck yeah, give me that offense. I'll take that offense to war against anybody. That ain't the offense they have right now. It's just not. So where do you balance it out? That's why I say, like, when, and this is all in reference to the Eagles more specifically this week, if the Chiefs can get a run game established, it allows them to control what direction this game is headed. And that's about the only way I can see them getting it done against this team, is controlling the tempo, the narrative of the game, the style of the game. What's the over-under on this game? Let me take a look at that, because it feels like an under game to me. 47, that's a little lower than I would have anticipated, but it does, like, I think both teams would love to play ball control offense in this game. It feels like an under game to me, as great as both of these offenses have been.
Yeah. I mean, I think that because of knowing that ball control is going to be an essential part of it. And I don't agree that it's going to be primarily through, like, on the ground. I think it should be, but I don't think that's in any
MO. I don't know that I think it will be. I just think it should be.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that that's got to be a key part of it, is to keep the ball away from Philly. They have so many weapons, and what you can't allow to have happen to you on the flip side is you can't allow Philly to control the time of possession. You can't allow Saquon.
Which is what they want
to
do.
Right, you can't allow Saquon to get a bunch of carries and just, like, kill you death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, that's not a recipe for success for Kansas City. There are, I know I always relate, like, I sometimes relate different things back to poker, but, and you're looking at, like, the different outs you've got, a different paths to win the game. I think Philly has a lot more outs to win this game than Kansas City does. I think Philly can win this game in a couple of different ways. It may be two or three different ways. I think Kansas City has one clear path. You have to keep the ball away from the Eagles. You have to control the tempo, control the time of possession. You have to make sure that you're not falling behind early. You have to make sure that you are staying competitive in the game down the stretch so you can continue to execute your strategy. The worst possible scenario for Kansas City is they fall behind early and then Philly controls the ball. And then whenever the Chiefs get the ball back, they're trying to throw it to win. I don't think that's the recipe for success for the Chiefs this weekend.
Now, I agree. What if that happens? Like, if they can't, and if they have to throw the ball, it's still Mahomes. Can they do it? And that'll be the really interesting test for this offense, I think. I don't think the Chiefs want to do that. I don't think they want to have to do it, but they might have to. And if they have to, can they get that done? That's what we'll find out on Sunday. It's a fascinating game, man. We're going to have to pick it at the end of the week. I can't imagine I'll talk myself into the Chiefs in this one. And I really want to be proven wrong on that. I really want to see. I don't know where it's going to come from. It'll come from Kelsey a little bit. Other than that, like, I don't know who's going to surprise us. Maybe, as Joshua Briscoe alluded to, it's a deep shot to Tyquan Thornton. You know, maybe it's Hollywood Brown handling another 16 targets. It's just like, what are they going to do at this game if they get down two scores in this game? All right, we'll come back. We've got Shreyas Lada next. He's going to join us. We'll talk about KU football against Missouri and look ahead to the Big 12. That's next. Stay tuned.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Shreyas Lada. No Hawaiian. We are ready to get you through a week. Shreyas, it is, boy, it feels soon to have a bye week, doesn't it? Just a couple weeks in. I know this is normal. It just feels that way. I think even after the Mizzou game, people are generally got to be pretty excited. I think maybe more so than before the year, more confident that KU looks pretty good. What's been your take on the Jayhawks through 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think they're
I think they're
a pretty talented team. They've shown a lot of promise, you know, the first two games especially. And, you know, at points of the Missouri game, they looked like they were in total control. Obviously, didn't go the way Kansas fans wanted or Kansas team wanted. But, you know, I think Lance Leipold said it best. There's a lot of season left. And now Big 12 play starts next week. And, you know, they play West Virginia. Then they play Cincinnati, UCF. You know, you want to go into the Texas Tech game, which is in a couple of weeks, hopefully with no more losses. That's ideal, you know, contending for a Big 12 title. But I think there's a real possibility of that with this Kansas team. Obviously, you know, unforeseen circumstances can happen. But, you know, Jalen Daniels has played his best ball in a long time. And I think that's going to win you a lot of football games.
We got to go back to the Missouri game, Shreyas. The Jayhawks got off to a blistering hot start in that game, at one point leading 21-6. And it looked like, okay, Kansas is going to be able to do this in hostile territory and taking down their bitter rivals. Missouri showed why they are a really talented football team. But what was your major takeaway from at least the start that Kansas showed in that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a tremendous response to a hostile crowd. I think it was the atmosphere was fantastic just being there. I was a big fan of that, how both teams clearly hate each other. But I was looking pretty impressed. You know, like you go into a road environment like that, you can get out to a 21-6 lead. It seemed like they were in complete control of the game until they weren't, of course. But I was just impressed that, you know, it was even a possibility for Kansas to be up that big, you know, because I think previous Kansas teams over the last few years, or really the last decade and a half, probably would be in a position to be 21-6 on Missouri.
Yeah, I have a hard time evaluating that game. Mm-hmm. I love that KU was in it to the end. Man, they Missouri just moved the ball so much more than KU in the game, and I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know if I should be looking at, like, look at what KU did, even despite that, or the fact that it happened. And it's like, is that a concern down the road that if that happens, they won't be close in these games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a difficult thing. The one thing that worries me is, and I wrote about this after the game, is when key decisions are made, you know, at the end of halves or near the end of the game, I have a little bit of a concern that the offense tends to go a little conservative. I thought that was a Jeff Grimes issue. I think it's not, as we've seen against Missouri. I think Lance Leipold can learn from this, but I think for me, watching the end of the second half, watching the end of the game, I felt like I was watching shades of last year's team. I don't really understand it because, yes, I understand being conservative last year when Jalen Daniels was having a rough year, rough start, whatever. This year, he's off to his best start he's had in a long time. He was the only reason there on that Missouri game. Yes, Kansas fans can say the safety was bad. Yes, the fumble was bad. Whatever. Okay, not great. But he was dealing against a tough Missouri defense. He had to deal with a good amount of drops. And to not play with any sense of urgency in the end of the first half, to me, that just you're giving up. I don't care what your, you know, like, mindset is. Zabrowski is not afraid to do, you know, take going fourth downs other times. Why not go for it or, you know, at least have better clock management there? And then at the end of the game, when they're down, you know, I think it was 4 or something, you know, and they have to punt the ball. I thought that was incredibly, you know, it was 4th and 7. You know, Emmanuel Henderson just misses a catch. I thought that was incredibly not the right decision. I know analytics will be like, oh my God, there's only 1%, but this defense hasn't been able to stop a nosebleed all game. They can't stop the run game. They've been on the field 2-1 by the end of the game. And semantics wise, I just don't understand it. You know, I feel like you're playing scared. And Jalen Daniels is a 6-year quarterback. Daniel Hyshaw is a 6-year running back. You can't play scared with who you have on offense personnel. Like, you have to trust that they are going to put you in a position to win. I think if I was a Kansas fan, that's the thing that irritates me the most, is it feels like they haven't learned anything from last year's debacle.
There was that stretch of the game, Shreyas, where, you know, towards the end of the first half, Missouri absolutely controlled the ball. You had, I think it was, what, 30 out of 31 plays were ran by Missouri. They had a long, sustained offensive drive that resulted in points. The very first play was that turnover safety from Jalen Daniels, and then Missouri goes on another long, sustained drive to basically end the half and walk away with points there, too. And it seemed to me, I mean, number one, that's a momentum killer. But number two, for the Jayhawks, you end up going into the second half, kind of playing on your heels a little bit, going back to what you had talked about with playing scared.
No, 100%. And I think so much of it was just bad clock management. Like, you know, they had the ball, I think, with 56 seconds, and they didn't even manage to, like, waste 30 seconds. Hyshaw made a monumental error, you know, going out of bounds and stopping the clock. Like, that's just, I mean, you can't do that. I'm sorry. You're a 6-year running back. That's unacceptable. I don't care what it is. And Lance Leipold said as much, basically, after the game, because, you know, Lance is not the one to shade his players or.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Throw him under the bus, but that was probably as explicit I've seen Lance be, you know, where, like, you know, we have to teach him better. And I'm like, what do you have to teach him better? He's a 6-year running back. Like, know the situational awareness to not be out of bounds. And you give up, you punt the ball 28 seconds, and Missouri has 2 big plays, and they almost score a touchdown. They put themselves in position to be in the red zone. They almost score a touchdown, but they don't. And then you end up with 3, going to the half, giving up 15 straight points. You're reeling. They have to kick the ball off. Obviously, it's going to be a tough position for Kansas to be in. I just didn't like that entire sequence the last 2 minutes. And to me, that felt like so much of what we watched last year in the first 6 games, where they gave up a ton of 1-score games. And I don't know. I'd like to think this is a learning moment and this is something they can learn from, but I thought they would have learned from last year and we wouldn't be talking about the same thing over and over and over again.
Let's talk about the run game. You've talked a lot about Hyshaw. through two games against two cupcakes, it looked pretty effective. And then against Missouri, it was almost literally non-existent. So which is it? You know, what's closer to the truth, do you think, as we get ready for Big 12 play?
Well, I think it's a pretty good run game for the most part, but Missouri is just more talented, more athletic on the line, and it showed. They could get holds open. And no disrespect to Daniel Heischauer or LaShawn Williams, but they're not Devin Neal. You know, I think Devin Neal would have been able to make some things more happen against that Tigers defense, especially as a receiver, you know, as some screens, et cetera. That was the one thing I was a little surprised about, is Kansas didn't use a little more screens with the running backs. You know, LaShawn Williams would have been, I think if you're not going to get the traditional run game going, then at least, you know, maybe do something there. But, you know, it was a little disappointing if you're a Kansas fan, because there was so much on Jalen Daniels' shoulders that game. 31 rushing yards, you know, total all game. They had two at halftime. I think Heischauer ended up with 6 rushing yards and 11 carries. That's unacceptable. That's just not good enough. And that's, like, worrying to me, because what happens when they play a team like Texas Tech, which is athletic, which is big, you know, is that same thing going to repeat itself, where Jalen Daniels feels like he has to play hero ball, where he feels like he has to carry the load? I think they're going to be fine for most of conference play, but there are certain games that I'm like, okay, that run defense could cause some issues for this offensive line.
Obviously, we go into the bye week, and you mentioned the three teams they have coming up as they kick off Big 12 play. West Virginia is down at the bottom of the Big 12 right now. The honeymoon stage is over for Rich Rodriguez, as they did not look good at all. I agree with you. I feel like the Jayhawks should enter into the Texas Tech game at 5-1. In your mind, what's the number one priority that the Jayhawks have to focus on in this bye week to be able to get to a point to where they're 5-1?
Yeah, I think the big thing is situational awareness, you know, game planning. You know, I think clock management is something that's going to be big, because let's call it what it is. If things go the way they're supposed to go, Kansas should not be threatened by West Virginia, right? They should win this game. So I think the big thing is, you know, is there more two-minute drills they can do to get them ready for end of halves? Is there more that they can do that when there are close games, they're going to be more prepared? I think that's going to be something big. I think obviously the defense needs to bounce back after a pretty horrendous outing versus Missouri. Like, that was probably the bet worst they're going to have all year defensively, especially against the run game. I think, you know, having Bengali Kamara fully healthy again will be big. You know, he played, but he was hurt still. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they look against West Virginia, because, like, if this is a team that we think is as good as they look, they should be pretty dominant against West Virginia. Like, this should be they should win by 10 points type of game.
Yeah, well, and we'll have plenty of time to look at them more specifically next week, Shreyas. We appreciate it. Go follow all of Shreyas's work at the KC Star. Follow him on X at SHRE98. Shreyas, we appreciate it. Enjoy the bye week, and we'll be ready to rock and roll into the Big 12 next week.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
There goes Shreyas Lotta. Good stuff. We'll see with KU.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench, and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I do think they need to run the ball. I'm a little concerned about the output there when we're talking about Missouri. It's just such a big part of what they've been doing offensively for a long time. Of course, Devin Neal helps. Devin Neal now of the NFL. But we'll see. We've got more time to talk about it next week. Hey, thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day here on Sports Daily. Thanks to Crestview Country Club, great supporter of the program. Fall golf season is here. It's been a minute. Tommy, since we've played, we got to get out there soon. It's chaos week for 3 weeks here for me, and then I'll be ready. It might be a little chilly. You like that? I'm not quite as much, but
I'm in on that. I love it when there's a chill in the air to go and play some golf.
We'll get a little October golf in there. But Crestview's got all kinds of fun stuff happening right now. It is a great time to give them a call and see what kind of packages that they're offering. Always different things happening there. Give them a call. Ask them about the different memberships. You'd be surprised at how many different kinds there are for the golfers and for the non-golfers. Tell them we sent you. We're both proud to be out there and having fun all the time. So I appreciate their support here.
Hey, real quick before we go to break, we would be remiss to not mention, I know you're not going to be on the show tomorrow, but tomorrow is the 25th anniversary of Sports Daily. Can you believe that?
Really?
25. No, so you're going to miss the 25th anniversary show. That's okay. But it's the 25th anniversary of this program here on KFH.
That is fantastic. I will be out tomorrow. I believe TJ is in for me tomorrow. I keep missing all of Glasser's betting insight. He nailed it in week one. I assume he did fine last week too, but that'll be tomorrow. Tim Fitzgerald. Don't go away. We got more Sports Daily coming up.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, you know, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.